So I've had a couple of church building kinds of experiences in my day. One was as a high schooler when I was the church custodian of the small congregation, small church in my hometown in Columbus Grove, Ohio. That meant I came in on Fridays or Saturdays, often on Saturdays, and I dusted off the pews. We had, you know, wooden pews. Actually, the congregation in the church in which I grew up had a circular seating plan. They called it the Akron plan. Kind of like this, but they were wooden pews. And one of the striking memories I have from that experience was changing the light bulbs in the chandeliers. Now, I don't know if you've ever lived or worshiped in a church like this particular one. I've been in several. The chandeliers were, you know, pretty big pieces of equipment hung from the ceiling. That's where you put chandeliers, right? And the way to change those light bulbs was right here among the pews. So in order to do that, somebody would have to go up into the attic of the church ceiling. Do you know this? I didn't know this until then. Above the ceiling, there's quite a bit of space in these buildings in a Gothic sort of arrangements where you have a roof that's kind of peaked. Point is, there's a lot more height at the point of the ceiling between the point of the ceiling and the point of the roof. You can stand up in there, and you can stand up in there two people on top of each other, really, maybe more than that. But at the ends, it's very, very slim space. You get up there in the ceiling with the caution to be very careful to put your feet on the rafters, because if you put your feet between the rafters, that will speed your going back down to the level of the sanctuary. And then above each chandelier there on the top of the rafter where the chandelier is, there's a little crank with a coil of string and electrical cord, so that you use the little crank to lower the chandelier down into the sanctuary so you can work it with it and change the light bulbs. And then you go back upstairs and crank the thing back up in place. And sure enough, the top of the, you can see it here actually, the top of the chain that suspends the chandelier is capped off with something like the cap you can see here. You know, this is round, and sure enough, this was a square block of wood around which the ceiling had been painted a different color, so that if the square block of wood went up on the angle, you could tell it wasn't where it used to be. I don't know if that was a problem or not many people look up there, I don't think. Anyway, so that was a pretty striking experience for me to go up and do all that, because it was partly scary and it was partly technical and all that. So that's a memory I have. Another one I have from that same church building was rewrapping the coil around the pulley attached to the rope that rings the bell. Got this? If you've done it before, you know what I mean. If you haven't ever done this before, you'd think I'm, you know, out in left field or something. But you pull on the rope that's wrapped around the pulley that's attached to the bell, and it rings the bell so people know what time worship is. And then if that comes off the pulley, you have to rewrap it. And I did that a couple of times. Well, that my home church is now closed, I'm so sad to say. It dwindled and dwindled and dwindled in size, and finally people went elsewhere for worship, and the congregation celebrated its last days just a couple of years ago. Well, there's another church story in my life that's much more recent. It was early in December. The college where I was the chaplain in southeastern Wisconsin, Carroll College, now Carroll University, every year had a choir concert for Christmas. And I think the last few years, the last few years that I was there, I had become the house manager for those concerts. So I got to train the students who were going to be ushers and tried to encourage them. And then it also meant that I was the last person out of the auditorium where the concert was. I picked up, you know, the programs that people left behind and kind of spruced things up. And then I left. And on this occasion, my spouse came along. Laura and I were there. She was waiting Well, patiently, she said, for me. And then we got in the car and drove off together. We got to the end of the street where we normally would turn right to go home and around town and then off back to Milwaukee. As we got to the intersection, I said, Laura, it looks a little smoky there in downtown Waukesha. Let's go check that. So we turned left. And then we turned left again and left again and left again and stopped at the stop sign at the intersection of sort of the main, one main street there, because the fire trucks had already arrived at the church just in our view, just up and half a block away from where we could park and watch this church fire. Now, I don't know, I may sound to you like a pyromaniac of sorts, but I want to tell you, it is an amazing sight to see a church interior engulfed in flames on the other side of the stained glass windows. If you could recreate that, that would be an attraction for the whole community, you know, to come by and several times a year or every week at a certain time or something, see the windows light up and, man, oh man. And as we sat there and watched, that was our view. We could see that the church was fully engulfed, as we say, on the inside in flame. And then as we watched, we could see in the roof line over here on the south end of the roof. Don, did I turn this on? We could see the smoke start to come through the railing there at the top of the roof. The smoke came through and then came on down the roof line. And pretty soon that was followed by fire. Flames shot through the top of the roof, came on down. And I don't know, I had turned my head to look at something else and missed the exciting moment when on the north end of the building, the steeple fell onto the sidewalk. A few days later, we learned that the rest of the building, the education wing that had been protected by a fire door that's set up to close, you know, if there's fire on one side or the other side, the fire door closed. It worked, but not successfully enough. So with all the water and smoke damage, the education wing also had to come down. So completely flattened church property. We've seen way too many pictures that looked an awful lot like that in the news these days, with these communities and neighborhoods in California just being wiped out. Well, all of that church story to remind us what we think about churches. And today I'm thinking particularly about church buildings. We invest a lot of ourselves in church buildings. We do that, I think, because we have so many rich memories in our lives that come from those buildings. Because my grandfather was a minister in the United Church of Christ, well, a congregational church at the time, and in a different community, I am not positive of the location where I was baptized. If I was baptized in that church building in Columbus Grove where I became the custodian, I might have been baptized in my grandfather's church. But in everything surrounding my baptism, it was about that congregation in Columbus Grove. That's where I went to Sunday school. That's where my mentors were in Sunday school. Every once in a while, I tell a sermon illustration that comes primarily from a high school teacher, from a Sunday school teacher I had when I was a high school student. It's another great note of pride to me that my parents were my high school Sunday school teachers, a different teacher. My parents were my Sunday school teachers when I was in the last couple of years of high school, junior year. And, you know, we say, no, we don't want to be teachers where our children are in the same class. Children say, no, I don't want to go if my parents are going to be the Sunday school teacher. But it worked out. I'm very happy to say it. Worked out fine. Much to my surprise, my parents were pretty good Sunday school teachers. We attach ourselves to the memories of the church buildings in which we were married. Did you go to a youth fellowship gathering someplace? A lot of people these days go to church in one place every Sunday, but they go to the youth meeting that's happening in another church in the neighborhood. We attach ourselves to those memories. When the church is destroyed by whatever means, it is a note of great sadness, great sorrow, great grief, because we have attached so much to those buildings. Now, we attach a lot to the people, etc., etc. And we know the truth of the Avery and Marsh song from 40 years ago. Has it been that long? I am the church. You are the church. We are the church together. all of God's people all around the world. Yes, we're the church together. The church is the people. The church is not a steeple. The church is the people. The church is a gathering place. It goes on from there. Even so, while we know, do you know this little thing? Do you know that, how that goes? Do you know this, Vernon? Can you see this? Here's the church. Oh, yeah. Here's the steeple. Open the doors. See all the people. We know that there's great truth in that. The church is not the building. The church is not the steeple. When it falls onto the sidewalk, it's too bad, but the church is the people. We know that. But we're still attached to those facilities. This facility. This is a great facility. When people say, what are you doing these days? I talk about the people and I talk about the facility. This is a great church facility here at the White Rock Presbyterian Church. Great facility. And now, today, this is where the real spoiler alert should be. Today, we hear from the gospel reading, along comes Jesus who says, this temple, with all these great stones, no two stones alike, will be torn down. How's good news come out of that from Jesus? Well, we've been around this story enough to appreciate that Jesus is not exactly talking about the stones. He's not exactly talking about the steeple. He's not exactly talking about the building. I think Jesus is talking about what goes on there. Jesus is talking about the way the church lords it over people. And the church is not the building that does it. It is what happens because of all those connections. The priests, the religious leaders, the people we look up to and trust. You don't have to be very far from a newspaper these days to know about the troubles in the Roman Catholic Church. We're mistaken if there aren't similar kinds of troubles in our own denominations. Now, I don't know specific stories about abuse in Presbyterian churches. Well, I guess I do know a couple. And the stories that I know are because those concerns have been addressed, not hidden or buried, but they've been addressed pretty directly. But there are plenty of those stories that many of us may have from our own experiences, even in one of the mainline denominations, this one and others, that didn't rise quite to the level of a police action or a court action, but they were situations where it felt like we were being taken advantage of, maybe because of sexuality issues, but maybe because of financial issues, maybe because of how we spend our time and energy and stewardship concerns. We have felt taken advantage of. We've been put to work watering that plant week after week, year after year, and nobody noticed or said a word of thanks. There you go. We thank you for that. But, there are lots of different ways we feel that those problems in the life of a church. What Jesus, I think, is talking about is something about the ways in which the temple represents for us something more concrete than our faith would allow it to be. Now, in retrospect, we understand Jesus is talking about himself, that this whole plan, this whole, what you think is a plan, this whole arrangement is going to be destroyed. My life is going to be taken from me, and in 3 days, resurrection happened. That leads me to the connection, I think, in these readings for today. I wonder, what does Samuel and his mother have to do with the lesson for today? I think it's back to that line I pointed to earlier. God forgives all our iniquity, redeems our life from the pit. Redeems. Hannah in the story is redeemed. In the word from the letter to the Hebrews, our faith and life, we are redeemed. I think redemption is a part of this story of the church, the temple being destroyed, and in 3 days it'll be built up again. Resurrection happens. In retrospect, we hear Jesus saying, I will be crucified, and in 3 days, resurrected. Challenging word for us. I believe these passages should all have challenges as well as inspirations. The challenging word for us, I believe, the challenging word for me is to be cautious about my attachment to those memories and in my attachment to being at least recognized as a leader in the faith community. Now, if that's true, I'm grateful for that, but I want to be cautious about how true that might be. But I need to be careful, and I think we all need to be careful about those attachments. So when the church building is destroyed, and all those other things we attach to it don't mean much anymore, yet what does remain is our faith and our confidence in the relationships we have with the people. That's, I think, the lesson for us these days. It's about the intangible stuff of church, the intangible realities, intangible as they are, real as they are, the intangible realities of life in the temple that really do express our faith and contribute to our growth in faith. It's sometimes not what we think it is. Sometimes it's not who's wearing the robes or who's picking up the offering. Sometimes it's about other things. And those other things are often the things of our faith. Let us trust in the spirited presence of Christ so much that we can continue to grow in our relationships, in the life of the congregation, in the life of the larger community as the body of Christ in the world. What do you think?